Tonight's guest on Downtown is an Emmy and Golden Globe Award-winning actress, an author, and an artist. You know her for her several years starring on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Showed us her comedic side in The Wedding Crashers. And stars in the second season of the wonderful Netflix series, The Kominsky Method. We are pleased to be joined this afternoon by actress Jane Seymour. Well, hi, Jane. This is Rich. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Love the new season of The Kominsky Method so much. And I understand that when you went in to meet with Chuck Lorre, they were considering you for a couple of different roles, but this has to feel good. They told you you maybe weren't old enough to be Alan Arkin's love interest.
Well, I showed them my birth certificate, and I said, I can age up and he can age down, and we'll meet in the middle. So that's what we did. And I persuaded Chuck that, you know, with a gray wig, that I would definitely be able to play that character. And actually, the fun part was when I showed up first day of shooting with my wig, Michael Douglas, who's known me for 40 years and had seen me at a table read 2 days earlier, actually put his hand out and said, "Hi, I'm Michael." And I went, "Yeah, it's Jane." And he went, "What?" He didn't recognize me. So that's when I felt really good about it. And Alan and I, you know, really kind of, we got the sparks going. It was great chemistry. And then Chuck just decided he loved this relationship. So he wrote more and more for us.
Well, and I love the relationship. I love the first season of the show, but the great additions to the cast of you and Paul Reiser, the wonderful appearance by Kathleen Turner. It's like there's even more depth to this season, and the scenes with you and Alan Arkin are so beautiful, so poignant, and so very real.
Yes, that's what everyone's been saying, and I must admit, I love season two even more than season one, and don't think, you know, I was just thinking recently in my career, I haven't had so many people, you know, picking up the phone or texting me or emailing me or writing to me about how much they're loving it. You know, people I've known for many, many years, and I've done millions of different films. But this one's really, you know, hit a nerve with people. People really love this character, and I do too. So it's been very satisfying for me.
I understand, too, that Alan Arkin had some unusual preparation for your first love scene.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what happens is you sit down at a table read, and you have no idea what you're going to see in the next episode because Chuck doesn't tell you what's going to happen next. And we're reading it, and he came to me and said, would you mind having brunch with my wife? And I said, I'd love to do that. And he said, yes, so we go to this, you'll have lunch, your brunch there. I think it's good that you guys meet. And so basically he wanted me to meet his wife and for her to feel comfortable that I was no threat whatsoever. It's so funny. So cute.
Well, it's got to be wonderful. I can imagine that table read to look around and see the level of not just talent, but experience in that room. I can't imagine there's a better cast on television anywhere.
It is pretty wild. I mean, you know, Paul Reiser is extraordinary all by himself, and obviously Michael and Alan and you know, and Sarah and Lisa Edelstein, and oh my goodness! I mean, wherever you look, and the young ones, they're fantastic too. It's it must be really fun for Chuck because he can throw anything out there, and everyone is just so happy to work with him. And it's written so brilliantly that we're all in the most fun playground you could ever be as adults.
We're talking with Jane Seymour here on Downtown. And when you came to comedy relatively late in your career, was Wedding Crashers really the first full-on comedy that you did?
I think so, that anyone would have seen. I did some comedic bits and pieces in Dr. Quinn, and I did a film with Chevy Chase years ago called Oh Heavenly Dog. But no, I would say Wedding Crashers was, you know, surprised everyone. They went, what? And then I got my own show. I think it was called, I can't remember what it was called now, but I had a comedy show there for a while, three camera. And then I've been just doing a lot of comedy. I've got a movie coming out next year called Friendsgiving, which everyone's telling me is hilarious, in which I play Malin Ackerman's Swedish mother, who is a bit of a crazy cougar. And I actually met her in real life as well. So, and I did a movie with De Niro called War with Grandpa. But yes, a lot of comedy. But I love comedy. I think I have a sort of natural comedic timing, but I really find comedy and drama to be very similar, really. It's just, you know, one is it makes you laugh because it's so real that you can't believe it's actually happening.
I found this very interesting. One of our favorite guests on the show is Roseanne Cash, and I didn't realize until recently that her dad, Johnny, and the late June Carter Cash are your twins' godparents.
Johnny's godparents, yes. Yeah, so I have twins, Johnny and Chris, and Johnny Keach is Johnny Cash's godson, and he's actually been in Nashville the last 4 years, writing, singing and writing and playing, and he's on his way back home to do a solo career here, based out of California, but yes. And the other one, twin, was Christopher Reeves, late Christopher Reeves' godson. So Johnny and June were on Dr. Quinn, I think, at least 3 or 4 times. Mm. The first time we worked together, Johnny and June loved me and then my then-husband, James Keach, and told us that someone was going to one day make a movie of their life, and they didn't trust anyone, and they felt that no one would know the real story. And they trusted us, so they asked us, and they gave us the rights, and they said, look, will you help us tell our story? And that ended up being Walk the Line.
And that worked out pretty well, too.
But thanks to that and the fact that we, at the last minute, Jim Mangold was able to get it made when, you know, we'd been working on it for about 11 years. And, you know, we really did it for them, for Johnny and June. And that's how I met Roseanne, of course, through them. And we really got to be like members of their family. I can't tell you how many times we stayed with them in Hendersonville and that house that's no longer there, and in Jamaica. And we became very, very close. It was fantastic. And then after that, we made the Glenn Campbell movie, I'll Be Me. And the same kind of things happen now with the Campbell family. We're very close, they're family to us.
You mentioned Dr. Quinn. Did you have any idea at the time what an iconic show that would be that continues to be watched by generations of people?
It's unbelievable. I think it still plays in 98 countries. It plays every day in France and I think in America and in a lot of countries. I don't think anyone had any idea how successful it was going to be, especially since when they made it, I was pretty much guaranteed that when I signed for 5 years that it would only be a movie of the week and it would never make it as a series, on the understanding that a woman in the lead wouldn't work, a medical show wouldn't work, anything that had family values or was in any way inspirational, and God forbid it should be, you know, a period piece, let alone a Western. So we kind of ticked all the boxes for things that wouldn't work, and of course that's what people wanted. They wanted something that spoke to the human condition. And I think it's so relevant today, what we did then, because what happened then in 1876 is what's happening today. It's, you know, pollution and people not understanding or being tolerant of other people's belief systems or cultures and, choices in medicine and you know, what you should or shouldn't read, censorship, and then women's liberation. So it's just it was an amazing show. It still is. It holds up very well.
Well, and you were ahead of your time as a strong, independent woman battling the patriarchy of those times. And I have to think you didn't have to look far for a role model and inspiration. Your mother had such a remarkable story.
Absolutely. My mother was born in Holland, Dutch-born, and she married her first boyfriend when she was 20 and went to live in Dutch East Indies in Indonesia on a tea plantation. She had a terrible marriage, which she escaped, and having just escaped it, the war broke out, and they incarcerated all the women and children and boys under the age of 12 in these camps. And my mother was in 3 of those camps for 3.5 years, survived that, and really kind of came out of there with this, what she taught my sisters and I, which is in life everyone has challenges, and the natural instinct is to keep it to yourself and not let anyone know how you're hurting or what's going on. But if you can accept what's happened, however difficult, open your heart and reach out to help someone else, there's always someone worse off than you. And by doing that, you find purpose. And when you find purpose, you can find love in your heart and the ability to receive and give and receive love in your life.
Very well
said. And that became the open heart. So open hearts jewelry, open hearts images that I paint, and sculptures that are now in public places, and, of course, the nonprofit Open Hearts Foundation that we award people and raise funds for people who do extraordinary things, having usually been through something very traumatic in their lives and realizing that there was a need that they could fill to help others.
You mentioned Christopher Reeve, and when I mentioned the people that we were talking with you today, so many people brought up Somewhere in Time. I love the movie, and it's one of those that people go back to and watch on a regular basis.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not uncommon for me to hear that people have watched it 15 to 30 times. It's not uncommon for me to hear that people play the music when they either get married or giving birth or, you know, something like that. I just came back from Mackinac Island from the Grand Hotel. They have the 39th anniversary, I think, and they people go there and they dress up and they, you know, pretend to be me and Chris and characters from the show. And everyone discusses the movie, and I brought three of my kids and my granddaughter with me this time, and we had the most amazing experience. But it's a movie that transcends time and place. I mean, it's just a beautiful little movie.
For anybody who doesn't know, too, you had a very successful and have had a very successful stage career. You were in the original Broadway cast of Amadeus with Sir Ian McKellen, Tim Curry, and a good friend of mine had a small role in that, Mark Torres, back in the early 80s.
Oh, yes, he was great. Yes, it was a fantastic experience. And, you know, I've always kind of broken all the rules, as you can tell when you started asking me about the comedy as well as playing, you know, leading ladies. But I was always told that if you're an actress, you either had to be television, film, theater, or radio. You couldn't do all of them. And God forbid you'd do a commercial. And I've done all of them, so, and continue to. So, you know, I just feel if you're an actor or an actress, you know, you do all of it.
And you're able to express your art in other ways as well. You've been painting since you were a little girl?
I have, but I took up painting very seriously when I turned 40, when I'd gone through a terrible divorce, lost everything financially and emotionally and physically, and that was just before I did Dr. Quinn, and I gave my last money that I had to an organization to prevent and help people who've been abused, children, called Child Help, and there was you know, a silent auction thing, and an artist who was offering to do a drawing of your kids in return for money for the organization. And so I was thinking my mother's concept, and I thought, well, that's something that's definitely worse off than what I'm going through. And the artist came to my house and to do the little drawing and saw my finger paintings and offered to teach me watercolor. And the next thing I knew, I couldn't stop painting. I've shown at the Guggenheim. I've had... I was asked to do a painting for private issue, a Discover card, a Corbel champagne, fabrics, now the jewelry, open hearts jewelry. And so art was a healing for me. And now it's become a very big part of my life, in terms of design and product as well. And I even have designed a ballet for Houston Ballet. Called Five Poems. So I have an interesting career. I don't just do one thing.
No, you don't. Well, that goes back to your roots. You began as a dancer, right?
Exactly. I began with flat feet and a speech impediment. So to solve the flat feet, I was put into ballet, and then I suddenly excelled. And the speech impediment, I ended up becoming an actress, pronouncing exactly what I couldn't pronounce, which was my R, which is, of course, the fundamental of speaking American. So don't tell me I can't do something because, it's dangerous. I tend to do it.
Jane, thank you so much. We love you on the new season of The Kaminsky Method. It's been wonderful to talk with you. Thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you.